Hello, this is Wendy Bauer reading to you today from the Decatur Herald and Review, dated September 11th, 2017. We will begin today's reading on the front page with an article headlined, Hot Rods for Remembrance. Cruise 11 continues efforts to honor those who serve. This is an article by Tony Reed from Decatur. Honoring the sacrifice of veterans is a generational thing. The Cruise 11 to Remember 9/11, hosted in Decatur's Central Park on Sunday, was set up 9 years ago to celebrate veterans and all first responders by marking the attacks that scarred a nation on September 11, 2001. Now, as Decatur prepares to honor 23-year-old sailor Logan Palmer at his funeral today, we are reminded of the young people willing to give their lives in defense of their nation. Sacrifice goes from one generation to the next, said Ayne Owens, the Cruise 11 organizer. It's important to always remember that. With live entertainment from Decatur band Electric Ray, food, and a car and motorcycle show that drew dozens of entries, Owens also wanted remembrance to be about embracing the pursuit of happiness. Sunday's activities wrapped up with the B.G. Nevitt Memorial Yellow Ribbon Cruise, in which show participants with fluttering yellow ribbons headed out on an 11-mile drive. It's named in memory of the Reverend B.G. Nevitt, the pastor of G.T. Church and a passionate supporter of veterans, who was killed in a motorcycle accident in 2013, the year he was going to be the keynote speaker at Cruise 11. Nevitt also loved American horsepower, and there is no doubt he would have gotten a kick out of the gleaming machines lined up around the park for judging on Sunday. One major head-turner was a 1935 Ford five-window coupe street rod owned by Lee Blair of Decatur. Painted in two-tone Challenger Plum Crazy Purple and Porsche Raspberry Pink, it was a dazzling automotive confection powered by a massive supercharged engine. I've always wanted one of these since I was 14 years old, said Blair, who is now 79. He said hot rods and street rods was a hobby created by returning GIs after World War II, and an event featuring them is a nice way to pay tribute to all veterans. That is why I like this event so much, he added. Money raised from Cruise 11 supports the Help for Heroes Fund, which meets all kinds of veterans' needs. Post 9/11 Army veteran Sean Taylor, 35, loves gardening, and the fund recently bought him a motorized tiller. He plans to use it to help create community gardens all over Decatur. Help for Heroes is a wonderful thing, he said. And Donette Beckett writes in the Together Decatur column, Navy Airman Follows Grandfather's Footsteps. From Sarah Gordo. Airman Tristan Comer has known he wanted to join the Navy as a mechanic since he was 6 years old, driven by family example. In August, the Cerro Gordo High School graduate joined the Vipers of Helicopter Maritime Strike Squadron 48, working as an aviation machinist's mate. It's the same job that his grandfather, Steve Comer, had when serving in the Navy through the Vietnam War. I remember talking to him about it, Steve Comer said. I guess he was listening more than I thought he was. Tristan Comer said he has been able to hit the ground running, turning wrenches from day one in the service. He and the crew operate the Navy's next-generation submarine hunter and anti-surface warfare helicopter, the MH-60R Seahawk. The helicopters are almost 65 feet long, weighing up to 23,500 pounds, and can travel more than 120 miles per hour for nearly 320 miles on a tank of gas. Part of our mission is combat search and rescue and reconnaissance, he said. We can also detect submarines. This aircraft is different than the machines his grandfather worked on 50 years ago when he served on the aircraft carrier USS Kitty Hawk. Steve Comer worked on jets. The younger Comer works on helicopters. They both have jet engines, Steve Comer said, but they are different in many ways. The young airman learned what he wanted to do early in his life. As a child, Tristan Comer often helped his family work on vehicles. He was excited to join the military after learning about his grandfather's experience and joined the Navy shortly after graduating from high school in 2016. He followed in the steps of his grandfather by attending a school for general aircraft training. A year later, he found himself with his squadron based at Mayport Naval Station, Florida. Tristan Comer knew he was on the same path as his grandfather, but didn't know he could possibly come close to the same career. "They will let you choose your job as the job needs filled," he said. "I was fortunate." The elder Comer is proud of his grandson, but not surprised by his path. "He always seems to know what he is doing," Steve said. "He was always a good kid. He was never out to get into trouble, and today that means quite a bit." And from the local page, Macon County deputy arrested. Domestic call leads to standoff with police. This is from Rosamond. A Macon County Sheriff's Office deputy was taken into custody early Sunday after gunfire erupted at his home. His wife fled and a 9-hour standoff with police ensued at the house in Rosamond. Marks N. Rogers, 51, who barricaded himself inside his home, finally surrendered himself at 1:11 a.m. and was taken into custody without further incident, according to a statement from the Illinois State Police. Christian County Sheriff's Office deputies had been called to Rogers' house at 4:15 p.m. Saturday for a domestic disturbance. Christian County Sheriff Bruce Kettlecamp said Rogers' wife had fled and Rogers had fired a couple of rounds as she was running away from the house. Deputies located her at a neighbor's home and took her to safety and then evacuated homes on either side of the Rogers property as they set up a perimeter. Kettlecamp said he called in the Illinois State Police SWAT team and state police negotiators to oversee contact with Rogers. "They are experts who handle these kinds of situations, and they have a lot more manpower than we would have," said Kettlecamp. The sheriff was on scene with his chief deputy and other officers, and he also called in 6 off-duty deputies to lend a hand. Kettlecamp singled out Macon County Sheriff Tom Schneider and his department for praise in helping to resolve the situation. "They were involved in a lot of the negotiations, which led to a peaceful ending," said Kettlecamp. No one at the Macon County Sheriff's Office was immediately available for comment Sunday night. Rogers was taken to Taylorville Memorial Hospital to be examined and was then transferred to the Christian County Jail. He is due to appear in Christian County Court today, where he will face preliminary charges resulting from the incident. Kettlecamp said it was a difficult situation to deal with, and he was relieved it was resolved without injury. And next, Valerie Wells writes from Decatur, "Weekend Food for Thought. Millican Backpack Program continues for Dennis kids." 1 year ago, Millican University students approached the Reverend Stacy Brohard at Good Samaritan Inn with an idea. They wanted to send backpacks of food home on weekends with Dennis school students who might not get enough to eat otherwise. "I'm excited and honored today to share with you the success of a partnership that is near and dear to my heart," said Professor Mary Garrison, who teaches social work at Millican and is the advisor to the student group. The group began planning the project in 2015. Knowing that low-income students who depend on school breakfasts and lunches might go without regular meals on weekends, the Millican students raised over $9,000 last year to provide 80 students with a backpack of food each weekend of the school year. The items are chosen carefully to be easy to prepare, and the first package of the year includes a can opener, because there might not be one at the child's home. Kids get 7 meals and snacks to get through the weekend. The food, in grocery bags, is discreetly placed in a student's backpack on Fridays, so the child isn't singled out in front of other students. Good Samaritan Inn, Decatur Public Schools Foundation, Crossing Healthcare, and Central Illinois Food Bank joined with the student group to provide the food, and the group is asking for donations again this year to continue the work. They need $9,500 and have raised $700 so far, said Milliken Senior Morgan Huffman. They prefer cash donations to food items so that they can pack the backpacks with consistent and similar items each week. Checks can be made to the DPS Foundation and sent to 101 West Cerro Gordo Street, Decatur, Illinois, 62523. The Big Blue Backpack Program has made a significant impact on our students at Dennis Lab School, said Abby Steele, the school's social worker. The backpacks allow students who may have had food insecurity issues in the past make it through the weekend. This program has been a great success, and I'm looking for it to be a model to other schools as a way to support their families and students. By providing the kids with food to get through the weekend, the Milliken senior, Katie Posh, the group said, the group helps those kids have better health and greater academic success. They come to school on Monday more ready to learn. This program benefits the children at Dennis in so many ways, including their attendance rates, health, academic success in confidence in itself, Posh said. During the first year, 21,600 food items were provided for 27 weekends. Four of the group's officers, Posh, Huffman, Leslie Chandler, and Ashley Woods, are studying for careers in human services, Garrison said. The fifth, Brooke Brazil, is studying art therapy. The combination of working together really hit this solution head-on, and for us, it's been flawless, Brohard said. Also on the local page, program lets the beat go on. EIU band welcomes Lakeland students. Rob Stroud writes from Mattoon, there are three Lakers among the Panthers this fall in the Eastern Illinois University Marching Band and Color Guard. Saxophone player Ross Lynch of Pena is taking advantage of a program that enables Lakeland students to participate in Eastern's marching band. He has joined the Panther ranks alongside his fellow Lakers, Color Guard members Sarah Goings and Catherine Gosnell, both of Mattoon. Lynch, a 19-year-old sophomore recreation major, said he enjoyed playing in his high school band but had thought that he would need to give up his pursuit after he enrolled at Lakeland, which does not have a band program. During his freshman year, Lynch learned about an opportunity for students at Lakeland in Mattoon to join the band at Eastern in nearby Charleston. Lynch said he gladly took this opportunity and has found the Panthers to be welcoming to Lakers. The saxophone player said he has had fun challenging his musical abilities in a university-level band and playing in the first night pep rally performance on Eastern's campus at the beginning of the fall semester. The atmosphere was like a football game. There were so many people there. It was nice to get out there and perform again, Lynch said, adding that he looks forward to playing at EIU football games this fall. Panthers marching band director Ben Druffel said students who enjoyed being in their high school bands typically want to continue having an outlet for their musical abilities in college. He said EIU's band draws students from 27 majors who are seeking this outlet. Druffel said the Panthers are glad to offer this opportunity to Lakers, who can inquire each spring about registering for the band as non-reticulating students at EIU. He said this ongoing program also helps promote EIU to potential transfer students from Lakeland. That gives us more people and a bigger sound and more people to be involved in the social aspect, Druffel said, adding they have 89 band and color guard members this fall. Lakeland Student Life Director Valerie Lynch said the college plans to add the EIU band program to the list of extracurricular and social opportunities that it promotes to prospective students. EIU's band recently recorded Lakeland's new school song, which will debut during the Laker Homecoming Kickoff Pep Rally at 11 a.m. September 27th in the Fieldhouse. Gosnell, a 19-year-old sophomore history major, said she joined Eastern's Color Guard last year at the suggestion of her Mattoon High School Color Guard coach, Allison Christian, who also coaches EIU's team. As a member of the EIU Color Guard, Gosnell said she has enjoyed performing at Panther sporting events and marching in the homecoming parade. She said her EIU teammates haven't treated her differently. They don't really care where you come from, just that you do your part to make the band great, Gosnell said. Goings, an 18-year-old freshman majoring in early childhood education, also said that her EIU teammates have been welcoming. Goings said she has found that her EIU teammates are highly motivated to do their best. Everyone wants to be there, so it makes it more enjoyable to be around them, Goings said. And the 100 Reasons to Love the Decatur Area column is Sportsman's Park offers a scenic lake destination. Allison Petty writes, located on the city's southeast side, Sportsman's Park offers a perfect spot to fish, picnic, interact with wildlife, or simply take in the beauty of nature. The 28-acre park off Lost Bridge Road encompasses multiple acres of thick, wooded property, as well as a small pond and several benches along the shoreline of what is known as the Big Creek area of Decatur. A long, gravel-covered breakwater juts into the lake, leading to a pavilion surrounded by water that's a popular spot for fishing. The city's multi-year, $91 million dredging project swept through last year, deepening the water several feet. The park was once home to the Macon County Sportsmen's Club at 3415 East Lost Bridge Road, according to Herald and Review newspaper archives. Activities from square dancing to hunting safety courses were held in the clubhouse building through the 1980s. The Decatur Park District purchased the two-story building in 1983, as it was being raised 2 years later when fire caused an estimated $3,000 to $5,000 worth of damage, according to a November 20, 1985 edition of the Herald and Review. With two parking lots, one clearly visible from Lost Bridge Road and another tucked next to the lake, the park is also a convenient spot for teenagers to park their cars and hang out, or for anyone looking for a good solo lunch spot. The park is also home to the Schaub Floral Display Center and greenhouse, where the Decatur Park District staff grow hundreds of plants each year. The Horticulture Center opened in 2003, and the greenhouse followed in 2012. Hundreds of people visit annually for seasonal plant sales before Mother's Day, Christmas, and other occasions. And a lovely photograph accompanies this article. Sportsman's Park allows visitors a great view of Lake Decatur from a wooden gazebo jutting out into the water. And from the At Work page, this is actually out of Michigan, clay is still the best. In high-tech world, car designers rely on ancient material. Car designers have every kind of software and virtual reality tool, but when they want to make sure a car's curves look just right, they rely on one of the world's oldest materials, clay. Every vehicle by every major car maker, from Mercedes to Tesla to Toyota, is formed in clay long before it ever hits the road. Automakers hire sculptors to make scale models and full-sized clay vehicles. They sculpt every detail from windows to door handles to slight creases in the hood. They sculpt interiors, too, in such fine detail that focus groups can't always tell they're looking at a clay dashboard. Car companies have tried other materials, like plaster. They've tried designing cars on computers. But without the hand sculpting process, designs tend to look stiff and stale, said Bob Boniface, the design director for Global Buick Exteriors at General Motors Company. Clay is still the best. It's a very flexible medium, Boniface said. We can put the clay on and take it off very quickly. Clay has been used in car design studios since at least the 1930s. Legendary GM designer Harley Earl is thought to be one of its pioneers. Now, in the same light-filled studios Earl once used, GM designers and sculptors still use thousands of pounds of reddish-brown clay each year from Kolb, a German supplier. Design is more critical than ever to car companies, Boniface said. Brands are now basically equal when it comes to crash performance, fuel economy, road feel, and price. Design is the great differentiator. A car is a product, yes, but it's a very emotional purchase, he said. So the work we do here in design is very, very important in terms of distinguishing our product from the rest of the competitive landscape. Car design begins with designers' sketches. Once the designers have narrowed down some ideas, sculptors make 1/3 scale clay models of their drawings. One design is eventually chosen to pursue. A full-scale clay model is the next step. At Buick, sculptors make a skeleton from foam, plywood, and aluminum, and then cover it with 2 to 3 inches of warm clay, which is heated in special ovens for 24 hours before it's used. When the clay cools, it's ready for sculpting. Car companies use milling machines to carve out the rough shape of the vehicle, a process that takes about 2 days. Then, sculptors do the detail work, shaping the subtle arches around the wheels or the jeweled patterns in the headlights. Gianna Ball, a Buick exterior sculptor, was trained in metalsmithing and worked in a high-end car restoration shop before completing a 2-year diploma program in clay modeling at Detroit's College for Creative Studies. She likes the challenge of sculpting the intricate details of the vehicle's front and rear. Clay is the perfect substance to work with, she said, because it's so forgiving. You can take a chance and make a design move that might work, might not work, and it's easily fixed or changed. Sculptors work closely with designers who might suggest changing an angle or moving a crease upward by a millimeter. They also work closely with digital sculptors who can scan the clay model and send that data to engineers. Engineers might send back changes to ensure the design meets crash test standards. For the last year, digital sculptor Courtney Urbiel has been working on the design of a door. Clay makes the work much faster, she said. If a corner is too sharp and might hit a passenger's elbow, a clay sculptor can soften it in a matter of minutes. Making that change digitally would take hours, Urbiel said. The final design of a vehicle might be changed 12 or more times. One critical test comes when the clay model is covered in a film that looks like paint and is taken outside to see how the natural light plays on its curves. Sometimes you take it outside and it looks horrible, Boniface said, but the car ultimately is going to be living in the wild. It takes 3 or 4 years from the first sketch to a car rolling off the line. On a recent day in Buick's studio, a clay model of a new 2018 Buick Enclave was partially hidden because sculptors were already working on style changes for a future Enclave. Designer Max Sullivan eyed the side of the model and stretched a long piece of tape over a section he wanted Ball to re-sculpt. The human touch, he said, has always been part of the process of making art. Designing cars is no different. You have to be able to mold it and shape it as it is in front of you, he said. If you go into the computer, it's just not real. And from the local briefs column from Decatur, Decatur man dies in crash. A man died Saturday night after his vehicle drove over a guardrail on US 36 in Decatur and hit a tree, police said. A statement from Macon County Deputy Coroner D. Coventry said Stephen Tate, 52, of Decatur, died as the result of severe chest trauma following the accident, which happened around 8 p.m. near the intersection with Sunnyside Road. Tate was taken to Decatur Memorial Hospital, where he was pronounced dead at 8:56 p.m., said Sergeant Tony Tertota with Decatur Police Department. Tertota said Tate was traveling eastbound on US 36 when he lost control of his pickup truck. He was found unresponsive at the scene. It is unknown at this time if the subject had a medical event prior to the traffic crash, Tertota said in a statement. The vehicle veered into the median, returned to the roadway, and then crossed all eastbound lanes before striking and going over the guardrail and hitting a tree on the south side of US 36. Tertota said the crash remains under investigation by the police department's fatal accident investigation team. Also from Decatur, computer search yields explicit video. Police in Decatur said Sunday they had seized the school-issued computer being used by a 16-year-old because it contained an explicit video featuring an underage boy and girl. Sergeant Josh Sheets said the MacBook computer was taken from the Eisenhower High School student Thursday morning. Police had been alerted by a staff member who had been checking the computer because she suspected it might show footage of a fight that had occurred at school. Sheets said the student who was using the computer, who has not been charged with any offense, said the video had been sent to him and he didn't remember who had sent it. He also told police he knew the identity of the 16-year-old girl in the video, but not the boy, and that neither of them are Eisenhower students. Police investigations are continuing. Next, from Decatur, man arrested for exposing self. A client at the Oasis Day Center for the Homeless was arrested, police said, after exposing himself to center staff. The 39-year-old man was taken into custody Thursday near the shelter in the 200 block of West Cerro Gordo Street. Sergeant Josh Sheets said a 51-year-old female staffer had complained that the suspect had walked up to her from behind and asked her to look at him, and when she did, he was exposing himself. She said he then walked outside laughing. She said he has been flirtatious to her recently, and she has received complaints from other females about this guy making inappropriate sexual advances toward them, Sheets added. He said the suspect was booked on a charge of public indecency. And finally, also from Decatur, bruised baby prompts investigation. An investigation is continuing after an 18-month-year baby boy turned up at Decatur Hospital covered in severe bruising. The baby had been brought to St. Mary's Hospital on Thursday night by its mother. She had been referred to the hospital by a doctor who feared the child may have suffered a serious injury, according to Decatur Police Sergeant Josh Sheets. And he said while hospital staff found no broken bones or concussion, they did conclude the injuries were suspicious in nature. The baby had contusions on his forehead, right thigh, and one that measured 5 inches wide on his left thigh. A contusion on the baby's back was hand-shaped. The injuries had first been noticed by the child's great-grandmother, who babysits him. Police and the Department of Children and Family Services are now working on the case. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Decatur Herald and Review, September 11th, 2017. Please stay tuned.